Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the Long Live Hollywood podcast. My name is Aaron. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for choosing to listen to this podcast. God bless you all, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. Welcome to the podcast. How are we doing? How's everybody? I hope everyone is healthy. I hope everyone is financially stable. I hope everyone has money in their pocket. And I hope everyone is safe. I really do. I hope you guys are doing really good. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Let's begin. Episode 54 starts right now. So I read an article on movieweb.com, and the name of the article was, "Did Tom Cruise Save Hollywood?" And within the article, it detailed how Steven Spielberg himself said that Tom Cruise saved Hollywood, saved theatrical distribution, especially with his movie Top Gun Maverick. Which got me thinking, did Tom Cruise actually save Hollywood, especially after the pandemic? Did he save theatrical distribution? Did he single-handedly save Hollywood? Did he single-handedly save theatrical distribution? What do you guys think? I don't know about the first one, the first question, but I can answer the second question. Did he save theatrical distribution? I would say he was a big help, especially with his, you know, with his Top Gun Maverick movie making $1 billion at the box office. Really excellent money. But when you have a conversation about the savior of theatrical distribution, movie theaters, you can never leave Marvel and DC out of the conversation, Disney out of the conversation. Literally every single movie Marvel puts out makes close to $1 billion. You know, either make half a billion, a quarter of a million, a quarter of a billion, or literally $1 billion. You look at something like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness making $955.8 million at the box office. That's almost $1 billion. Thor Love and Thunder making $760.9 million at the box office, and even non-comic book movies. You look at something like Jurassic World Dominion, which is a heavily criticized film. But hey, that film made literally $1 billion at the box office. And let's not forget about James Cameron with his $2 billion movie, Way of Water, making $2.313 billion at the box office. So like I said, did Tom Cruise save theatrical distribution? I think he helped. He was a big help. I would argue and say Top Gun Maverick was the most popular movie of 2022. I really think so. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that it really lived up to the hype. Top Gun 1 came out back in 1986, 7, 5, something like that. And it has been such a big time gap between Top Gun 1 and Maverick. Top Gun Maverick comes out 2022, and it's excellent. And that's kind of rare. It's kind of rare for a sequel that takes forever to come out to be really, really good. That's a rarity. If you go back to 1991 with Terminator 2, fantastic film, and then you cut to 2003, we get Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, not a good film. If you go back to Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade that came out in 1989, I want to say, fantastic film, marvelous. And then you cut to 2008, we get Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is not a bad film. It's not terrible. It's a 3 out of 5 film. I probably only saw it twice. I saw it once in theaters and then another time when I bought the Blu-ray. Not a bad film. It's just not quality. It's not good cinema, if that makes any sense. I'll tell you a movie that did live up to the hype. Let's go back to 1982. Ridley Scott releases a movie called Blade Runner. I think it's a really nice film. I'm not a huge, big, crazy fan of Blade Runner. I know there's a, I know there's a lot of people that love Blade Runner on a Star Wars level. I'm not one of those people. And then we cut to 2018. We get Blade Runner 2049. Blade Runner 2049 is fantastic. Excellent. Way better than the first film. So, did Tom Cruise save theatrical distribution? Not by himself. And I think that kind of answers the first question as well. Did Tom Cruise save Hollywood? Again, not by himself. Tom Cruise is a fantastic actor. He does star in some really quality films, really good films. Top Gun Maverick was the most popular movie of 2022, and it came out at the right time, too, during that summer. And it was a good change. It was a good change. I say that because during the summertime, we're so used to seeing the big Marvel movies, the big DC movies, these big comic book adaptations, you know, your Transformers and stuff, these big CGI, big budgeted CGI films during the summer. When was the last time you went to the theater during the summer and saw something like something else, but was, you know, amazing? A quality film. Good quality cinema. When was the last time, guys? So that's that story. An interesting one. Final topic of the episode. This is movies that I have seen recently. So the first movie that I saw recently since my last episode is Creed 3. Creed 3, directed by Michael B. Jordan, and it stars Michael B. Jordan, Jonathan Majors, Tessa Thompson, and Felicia Rashad. I believe that's her name, Felicia Rashad. Creed 3. And to be honest with you guys, I don't really remember this movie too much. I don't have too many vivid images in my head. I saw it when it came out, basically, first to second weekend. The movie came out back on March 3rd, but I do remember how I felt about the movie. I'm a big fan of Creed 1. Creed 2 is good, not as good as Creed 1. What I like about the Creed movies, a lot of things, but one thing that I really like about the Creed movies is the writing. Really good writing, really good lines, really good, fantastic character interactions, really good stuff, especially the lines from Rocky Balboa. Creed 3 is definitely a step down from Creed 1 and Creed 2, but it's not a bad movie. I feel like Creed 3's biggest problem is its execution. Everything that it's going for, it's not perfectly executed. The story is good, but it didn't have that emotional, impactful punch that I wanted it to have. It's still pretty good. I did like the rivalry between Adonis Creed and Damian. I did like the whole childhood friends and that personal story. I did like that. With the absence of Rocky Balboa, knowing that Rocky Balboa was not going to be in Creed 3, I was a little confused, like everyone else. Was he not going to be in Creed 3 for the sake of not being in Creed 3? You know, why is he in Creed 1, 2, but not in 3? Are they going to explain that? Why is he not in Creed 3? Rocky Balboa's absence makes perfect sense for a story like this. Rocky Balboa isn't needed in this story. And I know I said that this movie is kind of a step down from Creed 1 and Creed 2. One thing that it does retain are the performances. They're still good, especially from Jonathan Majors. I don't want to say he carries the movie, but he's easily the one to watch. great acting. Again, I do feel like the story is a bit of a step down, and that's because it doesn't have that emotional punch that I wanted it to have. When you watch a Rocky movie, when you come out of a Rocky movie, when you come out of a Creed movie, you know, you feel a little bit emotional. You have a tear in your eye almost. You tend to rethink life, rethink what's possible. I did get some of that here, but not on the same level as the other films. And I feel like the pacing in this film was a little bit too fast. The story kind of moved fast at times. I feel like this movie should have been a lot longer. I definitely wanted more interactions with Creed and Damian, and I wanted more backstory with young Creed and young Damian. I felt like the backstory was kind of glossed over. Stretch it out. Stretch out the backstory. Even if that means having a longer movie. Creed 3 is definitely the shortest Creed movie, coming in at 116 minutes. Creed 1 is 130 minutes, and Creed 2 is about 130 minutes, give or take. The boxing, the last fight. I didn't really like the boxing in this one. They try to do slow-mo. Every now and then you get a slow-mo punch. Slow-mo. Like, what is this, a Marvel movie? You know, they tried to be a little bit too cool with it. Just give me some classic boxing. You don't have to do too much with the boxing. I don't know why they did that. Just give me some classic boxing. I don't need any type of special effects whatsoever. Classic, realistic boxing. That's all. So, bottom line, Creed 3 is a good movie, but it is a step down from Creed 1 and 2. Great acting. Great. Actually, everything is good in Creed 3. Like I said, it's just a step down. Still an enjoyable movie, I think. So I'm going to give Creed 3 a B minus. All right. So the next movie that I saw since my last episode is Scream 6, directed by Tyler Gillett and Matt Beninelli-Oplen. And it stars Melissa Barrera, Courtney Cox, Jenna Ortega, Hayden Panettiere, and everyone else. I must say, this is the first Scream film that I really wasn't anticipating that much. After seeing Scream 5 and seeing where the franchise was going, wasn't a big fan of the direction. I said in Scream 5, Jenna Ortega's character, Tara Carpenter, she should have been Sydney Prescott's daughter. Her name should have been Tara Prescott. Scream 5 should have been a mother and daughter movie. Sydney Prescott trying to protect her daughter from the killer. And I believe that first scene is where Tara gets attacked. That first setup scene. And right before the scene happened, you know, right before that phone call, there should have been pan shots of photographs with Sydney Prescott and Tara, revealing to the audience that Sydney has a daughter, which is Tara. And then the phone ring and it's Ghostface on the other end. And then Tara gets attacked. Tara's presumably dead. And then the Scream 5 logo flashes on the screen. That's a good setup. That's a good synopsis. That's what we should have got. That's how you set up Scream 5. And that would have been the perfect segue into Scream 6. Sydney said, you know what? Tara, I don't want you to go to Woodsboro College. I want you to go all the way across the country to New York with your friends, where you be safe. And now we have Scream 6. That's what should have happened. But that didn't happen. So here we are with Scream 6. Did I enjoy it? It was okay. Just okay. I did have my concerns going into Scream 6, especially coming from Scream 5. I had my concerns about the future of Scream. It did not look good to me. And knowing that Neve Campbell was absent from Scream 6 shocked me, like many of you guys and girls out there, shocked everyone. My biggest problem with Scream 6 is my biggest problem with Scream 5, and that is performances. Yes, I knew that the performance was going to be an issue. Scream 5, Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette carries the film when it comes to performances. Everyone else, a step down. Jenna Ortega is pretty cool. She's okay. Melissa Barrera, she's all right. But everyone else, a massive step down when it comes to performances. That's my biggest problem with Scream 6. Everything else, the movie does have its pros and cons. It's not perfect, but it is enjoyable. For a Scream movie, right? What makes a Scream movie, not necessarily a movie in general. Scream, it knows what kind of franchise it is. We know what kind of franchise it is. Scream, these aren't Oscar movies. We all know that the highest possible award that a Scream film could get is probably an MTV Movie Award. And I do have a few more cons that I want to talk about in a minute. But let's switch gears. Some of the stuff that I did like, I thought the story was pretty cool. I thought it worked. I thought it was a natural, organic transition from Woodsboro to New York. The movie isn't set in New York for the sake of it being in New York. It made sense. I thought it was a natural transition. The absence of Neve Campbell was addressed. The kills, even though they are good and they are violent, I would say that they're not as violent as I thought they were going to be. The way that this movie was hyped up, they hyped it up saying that Scream 6 is going to have the most violent kills, graphic kills, bloodiest kills of any Scream movie. I didn't get that. I thought it was about on par with Scream 5. Now, I could be wrong. I could be 100% wrong. I haven't seen Scream 5 since it came out. And Scream 6, I feel like the level of violence is something that I've seen before in Scream 5. Do feel free to challenge me on that, guys. Do feel free to debate me. For those of you who have vivid images of Scream 5 in your head right now, maybe you've just popped in the DVD not too long ago. Is Scream 6 more violent than Scream 5 or vice versa? Or are they both on par? But bottom line, I think the kills in Scream 6 are great. Great kills. Violent kills as well. Even though the kills are good, I will say the tension leading up to the kills is a bit weak this time around. The tension. In other words, you know when the girl is on the phone and on the other end it's Ghostface. What's your favorite scary movie? I'm in the house, but the question is, where am I? You know, that tension leading up to the reveal of Ghostface. You know, when Ghostface pops out of a closet or he'll come out of the shadows or something. He comes out of nowhere like a ninja. That tension is a little bit, it's not as effective this time around, at least for me. Let's say Ghostface reveals himself 15 times in the movie. About 11 to 12 out of those 15 times, I called it. Each time, I'm like, okay, Ghostface, he's probably in the closet, or he's probably over there. Or let's say a woman is bending down and she picks up a $20 bill from the floor. I'm thinking, when she stands back up, I'm pretty sure Ghostface is going to be behind her. Very predictable. Thoughts like that. Every time Ghostface revealed himself, I was not surprised. For the most part, I called out everything. Every single reveal. Just about. The big reveal at the end of the movie, I did like the reveal. I half liked it. I liked the fact how it sort of piggybacked from the previous movie, Scream 5. I like how those two movies, Scream 5 and Scream 6, I like how they're kind of connected. I thought that was really cool. Like I said, I really like Scream 6's story. I do find it interesting. It's just the performances. They're not that good. When the killer, I'm assuming everyone's seen Scream 6 at this point. Okay, spoiler. When the killers and the father, when they get revealed, you know, when the killers remove their mask, usually a lot of dialogue follows. In any Scream movie, once the killer gets revealed, a lot of dialogue follows. Why the killer became the killer? What does that killer have against Sydney? And, you know, dialogue. In Scream 6, when the killers were revealed, I could care less about the dialogue. And that's because the performances were not that good. If you go back to Scream 1, go back to Billy Loomis and Stu. Think about those two characters. Think about those two guys who played those two characters. Those guys were amazing. Those guys were fantastic. Great performances. They were believable. They came off very believable. They were menacing. They were crazy. They were sadistic. They were evil. And they were just, you know, perfect. Perfect for the roles. And then we get to Scream 6, and you get what I'm trying to say. That's been my problem with Scream 5, and now Scream 6, and a little bit of Scream 4 as well. So bottom line, I'm going to end the review here, because I can easily talk about this movie for 35 minutes straight, but I'm not going to do that. So bottom line, Scream 6 is okay. I did enjoy it. I think it does have its enjoyable moments. You know, it's not a bad film. It's a movie that knows what kind of movie it is. It knows what kind of franchise it is. So I can't be too harsh on it. I do know what to expect from a Scream film. I do have other cons that I can go into detail, much longer detail. You know, I'm that kind of person. You know who I am. Like I said, the story is good. The kills are good. Very aggressive. Ghostface is aggressive in this one. The tension leading up to the reveal of Ghostface, whenever he pops out and starts chasing people, you know, when he reveals himself, like I said, is a bit more predictable for me. Just a personal con for me. Not a universal con, just a personal con for me. The story is good. What else? So I'm going to give Scream 6 a 3 out of 5. Changing my rating system. 3 out of 5. Scream 6 gets a 3 out of 5. So the last movie that I want to talk about is, you guessed it, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Starring Chris Pratt as Mario, Ayanna Taylor-Joy as Princess Peach, Jack Black as Bowser, Charlie Day as Luigi, Keegan-Michael Key as Toad, and Seth Rogen as Donkey Kong. I'm a big fan of Mario. I think you have to be if you're a big fan of Nintendo. I pretty much played all the Mario games, all of the console Mario games, except Super Mario Galaxy 2 and Super Mario Sunshine. Other than that, I think I've played them all. And I've played a bunch of the handhelds. Not all of them, but a bunch. So when this movie got announced, and the cast got announced as well, obviously there was some big controversy with the voice of Mario. Mario wasn't going to have his iconic voice. You know that, wahoo, here we go. Oh no, mamma mia. And a lot of people were upset. Some people wanted the actual person. I believe his name is Charles Martinet. The guy who does the voice in the video games. That legendary guy. People wanted that guy to do the voice of Mario in the movie. And honestly, I was okay with the change. As much as I love the iconic voice, and as much as I love for things to be accurate, I really couldn't listen to that voice for 2 hours straight in a movie. Wahoo! Oh, mamma mia! Salami, Bowser! Not for 2 hours straight, guys. I'm sorry. I was fine with that change. For, you know, that change with Mario sounding a bit more neutral. Not for 2 hours straight, guys. I can't listen to that. Beautiful animation, beautiful CGI. You can tell the director knows who Mario is. The movie doesn't look offensive. It looks very faithful to the source material. But all that being said, I must say, I don't think this movie is for me. As big of a Mario fan that I am, I don't think this film is for me. Now, notice I didn't say that this film is bad. I simply said that this movie is not for me. I'm not the biggest fan of heavy fan service in a movie. I like fan service, but I don't like for a movie to be bombarded by fan service. Every 15 to 30 seconds, there's something on screen that is from a Mario game. You look at something and you say, oh, that's from Mario 64. Oh, look, that's from Mario Super Mario Galaxy. That's from Super Mario Sunshine. Every 15 to 30 seconds, there is something on screen that reminds you of one of the video games. That's straight out of the video games. And the story's pacing is extremely fast. It doesn't have that much downtime. There's always something going on screen. This movie's a big party. But to be fair, if you look at any Super Mario game, if you played any Super Mario game, from the first level all the way up to the last level, there's always something going on. It doesn't matter if you're on level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 37, 50. Every single level and Mario, in any Mario game, there's something going on. So the movie is 1,000% accurate to the video games. And the question you guys probably have for me is, Aaron, you've played the games. You said you're a big fan of Super Mario. You literally said you've played every single Super Mario game except Galaxy 2 and Sunshine. What were you expecting? This is exactly what a Super Mario movie should be. What were you expecting? How are you upset? I'm just one of those people who can't turn off their brain and just appreciate what's on screen. I've never been a person like that. John Campia, the YouTuber John Campia, described this movie perfectly. He said, this movie is all about moments. And I would agree, it's all about moments. It's not really a legitimate movie. Not a big fan of that approach. I wanted something a little closer to Sonic the Hedgehog. Yes, there's fan service in Sonic the Hedgehog, but it's not all over the place. The movie isn't bombarded by fan service. Sonic the Hedgehog is a road trip movie first. And the action kind of complements the story. Sonic the Hedgehog, even though it does have a lot of action, but it's not all about the action. There is a really good story. I mean, it's not like Oscar good, but the story, it holds your attention. It's a pretty good story. A pretty good Sonic story, yeah. By the way, I'm talking about Sonic the Hedgehog 1. And even in Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the sequel, yes, there is fan service. Even more fan service than the first one. But the movie is still a legitimate movie first that happens to have fan service. I like that approach a lot better. That's just me. That's just how I roll. Going back to Super Mario. Now, yes, I did have some enjoyment with the movie. The movie isn't boring, not in the slightest. Performances are great. One performance that was slightly odd to me was Ayana Taylor-Joy as Princess Peach. Not a bad performance, just an odd one. I say that because Princess Peach in the video games is one of the most soft-spoken, feminine video game characters in history. And in the movie, she is a lot more dominant. She has, you know, she's a little bit more, I don't want to say aggressive. She has a much larger presence than I thought she would have. Not a bad thing, but but an obvious thing to note how different Princess Peach is in the movie. And I think it's because of the nature of the story, because Princess Peach has a bigger presence in the movie. Maybe they had to switch her personality up to carry the story, because that would make sense. Sometimes you have to change things up for the sake of story, depending on what kind of story you want to tell. Sometimes you have to change things up. So anyway, soundtrack is good. Great performances, fun movie. It's never boring. There's always something going on screen. This movie is simply not for me. Not a big fan of the wall-to-wall fan service. Just not for me. I'll still watch it again, but not in theaters. I'll buy the Blu-ray at a reasonable price. So I'm giving the Super Mario Brothers movie a 3 out of 5. And that's the end of the episode. Episode 54 is done. Thank you for listening. Just because it hurts doesn't mean you're gonna die. You gotta get up and try and try and try. Gotta get up and try and try and try. Gotta get up and try and try and try. Who sings that? Is that Kelly Clarkson? I believe so. That's my first guest. I think I'm right. Kelly Clarkson. You gotta get up and try and try. I gotta go to the shoe store and return a belt. I bought a belt that was too small for me. Or I can keep the belt and just lose the weight. I've been losing a lot of weight lately. As of right now, I believe I'm 35 pounds down, 35, 36, 37. I started at 244. I wasn't unhealthy. I'm just slimming down. I was a pretty big, not a big person. I was solid, kind of muscular, football shape, if you will. Just trying to slim things down. Just kind of done with having a big body. When I was 244 pounds, my waist was 38. I had a 38-inch waist. Now I'm down to a 36 waist, which is really cool, you know, because the coolest part is I can now wear clothes that I bought 5 to 6 years ago. You know those clothes? You ever had a shirt or a pair of pants that's way in the back of your closet that you could never wear? I have a lot of clothes like that, and I can officially wear all of my clothes. So I don't really have to, do any heavy shopping, you know, getting the right clothes, the smaller clothes and stuff. I can just wear what I used to wear. That saves a lot of money. And of course I have to do some shopping here and there. All my clothes are still in style. I do dress somewhat basic, if you will. I'm not a trendy person. I don't like to look trendy. I don't do skinny jeans, baggy jeans, Michael Jordan shoes. You know, I don't like to look like the modern person. You know, the everyday person. I dress extremely masculine. It's all about masculinity. That's my style. And I think dressing masculine, that really never goes out of style. I do look up to people like James Bond, Idris Elba, Henry Cavill, and I would also throw in Chris Evans as well. That's what I'm going for. Oh, and one more thing, guys. My foot surgery update. Yeah, back on January 30th, I had a foot surgery that went very well, surprisingly well. It did not hurt. As of this moment, as of me speaking on the mic as I speak, my foot is doing extremely good. I can walk, I can hop, I can skip, I can crouch and get back up just fine. I can do cardio just fine. Just fine. If I'm outside doing some walking, some speed walking, and let's say a dog got loose, I'm 75% sure that I can get away. I haven't tried running yet. I'm pretty sure I can run, but I'm kind of scared to run. I'm not in pain. My doctor says that, you know, I can do anything. I just need to use my foot again. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm going to start running. I'm going to try running. I'm going to start jogging and then kind of graduate into running. So anyway, I got a new foot, baby. I can kick a soccer ball. I can kick a football. I can throw out a roundhouse kick. But God forbid if someone was to catch my foot at mid-kick. You guys remember at the end of Karate Kid, the first one, the first movie, Johnny, he catches Daniel's leg at mid-kick, and then Johnny, he did that elbow shot to the back of Daniel's leg, and then Daniel fell to the ground and started to roll around in pain. Even though I feel really good and my foot is just about healed, if someone was to do that to my ankle, my surgical area, that would be bad news for me. I'm on one leg and the guy's got my foot and I'm searching my back pocket for a pocket knife or something. Do I have a pocket knife or something? I need to break free. So I got to use my other leg and do like a Jackie Chan kick. You know, I got to do one of those rush hour kicks just to break free. Got to kick the guy in his temple or something. And hopefully that takes him out. That's a sticky situation. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got for this episode. Thank you for listening. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Long Live Hollywood podcast. My name is Aaron. Be safe out there. Love each other. Do nice things for each other. And good things will come to you. I promise you. Take care now. Bye-bye.